a deadly, you know, infection, disease, cancer. Of course, I can only imagine how depressing that could be,
right,
to know you're leaving the world and, you know, everyone else is and continuing on without you. And these experiences with psilocybin in those cases were drastically helpful to the people who underwent them and allowed them to really like have a lot more peace about what they were going through. Mm-hmm. Also with soldiers who are coming back from war situations with PTSD, they've done a lot of psilocybin research. And this is the fact that it was so helpful actually, and that a lot of, you know, soldiers and even, you know, bigger studies within the military were showing such positive results has been what helped push, like, you know, Congress, senators that traditionally would be like, no, this is a drug, we don't want anything to do with it.
Right.
To allow more and more availability of, you know, not only studies, but also treatments available to all of us in the coming years. So really fascinating stuff.
That's wonderful. I mean, I'm all about options. So the more options we can have to treat more people, I'm good with it. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to Noise Filter, your public health podcast.
Protect yourself and others by getting the COVID-19 vaccine and booster, wearing a mask, and social distancing wherever possible. Remember, health is a human right.
Hi, I'm Dr. Demento, and you are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is listener-sponsored. That's right, 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. Right now, during our annual spring membership drive, your support can go even further. Contribute today at kboo.fm/give, and your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $12,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Maximize the impact of your support for KBOO right now.
Welcome to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
Thank you so much for joining us. Just quickly before we jump into the show, we'd like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. So be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. And as a quick aside before we get into our main topic today, I wanted to let you, our listeners, know that KBOO is in the middle of our spring membership fundraising drive. Don't forget that KBOO is a commercial-free, volunteer-powered radio made possible by amazing people like you. In fact, 80% of the station's fundraising funding actually comes from the generosity of our members. So if you can, please go help us reach our fundraising goal by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to 44321. We here at Labor Radio thank you so much for your support. And now into the main discussion that we're going to be talking about today. You know, we've covered a lot of the unionizing drives at places like Amazon and other fast food locations around the country of late, but none has really caught the public attention a lot more than Starbucks has. You know, really, it's kind of exploded in the last 6 months or so, beginning with the first store that organized in Buffalo, New York last fall. There has been, you know, a unionization movement that has swept like wildfire through Starbucks stores around the country, you know, from coast to coast. And since that first store in Buffalo, New York was organized and successfully voted in favor of the union, there have been 60 more locations, Starbucks locations around the country that have voted to organize with the Starbucks Workers United Union, and nearly 250 more have signed petitions to hold votes for the, you know, union votes across the country. So, you know, the quick success of and the swelling pro-union fervor that has, you know, come from that is, you know, it's obviously thanks in large part to the demands that the workers have had and the shared grievances, but also it has a lot to do with the sort of widespread employee resentment to the scorched earth union busting tactics that the company has rolled out and it really has forced upon them since this movement has started. And these tactics, of course, have only intensified since the billionaire founder and longtime Starbucks CEO, Howard Schultz, returned to the company as the interim CEO last month in April. Schultz, who has a long and frankly despicable history of supporting all manner of union busting efforts, made it immediately clear that he returned to the top job with the singular purpose of crushing the ongoing unionization effort by really any means necessary. And you know, in a statement that was released the day that his return was announced, Schultz said that the company is, you know, quote, at a point where it must transform once again, and that the company leadership, quote, must continue to earn the trust of our people and our customers every day. You know, which is great rhetoric for, you know, putting a public face out there and, you know, and making your case and winning public support. But his actions since taking over the company and becoming interim CEO again have made it really abundantly clear that there's absolutely no room in this transformation and this trust earning process for any employee collective bargaining. And in a letter that he wrote to Starbucks employees, Schultz lamented that, quote, no partner, and, you know, I'll explain that partners are what they refer to as employees, you know, so if you're an employee, you're technically a partner at the company. But he wrote that no partner has ever needed to have a representative seek to obtain things we all have as partners at Starbucks. And I'm saddened and concerned to hear that anyone thinks that that is needed now. So yeah, it breaks his heart that folks want to try and organize a union, and he's coming back just to save his company and to make sure all his partners are taken care of.
Yeah, and I think I think, you know, we've been having so many of these conversations over the last, you know, several shows, and I think it's very interesting kind of the state of unionization as a whole, just because, you know, we're against this kind of favorable, you know, economy and kind of backdrop for folks really feeling like, you know, coming out of the pandemic and people kind of looking for more out of their job and different things like this and the way they're treated. But at the same time, you know, and as we'll get into it, the tactics are getting stronger, right? And yeah. So it's going to be very interesting to see whether this kind of surge in unionization, which I think, you know, 3 or 4 years ago we could have never expected at all.
Oh, absolutely.
If it's able to kind of keep up with all of the new tactics that are coming out, right? And people like Schultz kind of coming back for specifically, you know, like, hey, you know, we're not that worried about the next couple quarters. It's just, you know, how do we kind of move on from this and then get back to business?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you're absolutely right that, you know, as the movement grows in size and in scope, you know, the tactics, the union busting tactics, as we've seen, continue to get intense, more and more intensified.
And the spending is going to continue to go up as well, right? I mean, this is, I think we're only seeing the beginning of what people are willing to spend to suppress this sort of thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Just like, you know, as we've discussed a bunch of times, the companies like Uber and Lyft that have spent small fortunes to put down any attempt to make their contractors employees, the same thing is true in this realm of, like, companies are willing to spend more than they would ever have to spend on making, you know, paying unionized employees just to keep there from being a union in perpetuity moving forward. And so, yeah, for their part, the employees, or rather the Starbucks partners, want higher wages. They want changes. You know, these are just their basic demands. They want higher wages, changes to the scheduling system, and a transformation of how the company handles tips, the tips within, you know, each shift, among other demands. And a lot of them have expressed frustration as pandemic benefits, such as hazard pay and daily food and drink allowances, were taken away, even as Starbucks sales rebounded very early on in the pandemic and profits soared. Starbucks, of course, says that it has replaced some COVID-19 benefits with others, such as, you know, paid COVID isolation leave, as the pandemic has evolved, which, you know, is certainly admirable, but employees have rebutted that by claiming that, the employees' claims have been bolstered by a new study that came out from Brookings Institute that found that Amazon, Starbucks, and 20 other major American corporations made $1.5 trillion during the pandemic, but only 2% of that massive fortune went back to their workers. And of course, you know, a much larger portion of those profits went to things like stock buybacks to inflate their stock price and executive pays, which, you know, has kind of been the case for the last 50, 60 years and how companies deal with profits, right? Now, you know, another major grievance that has been aired by frustrated workers is that their hours have been cut and an unusual number of new hires have been brought into the stores, which, you know, may or may not be a result of the fact that, like, you know, there's unionization talk. And so they, this, you know, kind of like Amazon does, there's such high turnover that it's hard to get any one group of workers kind of organized and collectively bargain, you know, working towards the same goal. If you, in a place like Starbucks, if you are hiring more and more workers and changing out the personnel, it's hard to keep a cohesive unit that would work towards a common goal like that. And then, you know, there's, those are just some of the complaints, you know, so all the things we've just listed are really just some of the complaints that have been leveled against the company. And that all comes before they ramped up their targeted anti-union retaliation efforts, which we are going to go into here. And they are pretty appalling in a lot of ways. So after the first drive to unionize the store in Buffalo began, Starbucks immediately went out and hired a union avoidance law firm, which is basically just a union busting law firm. And that firm is called Littler Mendelson. And they are basically, they were hired to represent Starbucks at the National Labor Relations Board. And so using at least 30 lawyers from that firm, they've deployed a tactic that is pretty common for companies of their, you know, considerable resources. And that tactic is just delay, delay, delay. Like, they have, their move is basically to file the same identical argument in response to every petition that comes up. You know, for every union petition that comes in front of the NLRB, they file the exact same argument for each single one. They don't change it. They just basically change the location and, like, the boilerplate language, and they file it over and over again. Now, you know, the argument that that they're petitioning, or that they're filing over and over again in response to these petitions, is that the bargaining unit must be grouped into a much larger one encompassing all the Starbucks stores in a given area. You know, so this is a thing that we've seen again over and over again at places where a group of, you know, work group petitions to unionize, and the company responds by saying, like, no, you can't just unionize that group. You have to, your bargaining unit has to be of this much larger group that then makes it harder.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, we saw that with Amazon when they started going after kind of like part-time workers, right? Like, you know, those initial attempts were all kind of like FTE folks. And then, yeah, they, no, you gotta include seasonal workers who are really not trying to get wrapped up in stuff like this and are a little bit easier to kind of persuade and exactly, work on.
Yeah. Now, you know, luckily, the NLRB shut this down immediately. Like, they recognized what Starbucks was doing, and they have continued again and again and again every time that they file the same argument to reject that argument, and have instead green-lighted individual store elections because of a long-standing rule that basically presumes single-site unions are appropriate. So they have basically said, no, you as Starbucks are not allowed to say that this one store can't unionize because they have to work with all the stores in the region. Instead, that one store actually has the right to unionize, and they can do it as their own bargaining unit. So, you know, nevertheless, the company's lawyers will continue to file the same argument each time a new petition comes in front of the NLRB. And, you know, that really is another one of the tactics that they use, which is basically they use the tactic of delay, which buys them more time, both to continue beating their workers over the head with their anti-union rhetoric and all the things that they're doing in that sense, but also it then forces the union to continually file file rebuttals to that, which costs them time and money, you know, which if it comes down to a situation where Starbucks versus the union, it's who has more time and money, you know, Starbucks is going to win that every single day. So that is one of the major tactics that they're throwing out there. Another tactic employed by the company has been to flood the zone with outside managers and executives. You know, and this is, again, a thing that you see in a lot of different situations, companies that are fighting the unionization process. But, you know, so when corporate gets wind of an organizing effort growing at a certain store, they've repeatedly sent in managers from other regions to take over those stores in that area with the explicit instructions of interrupting the organizing process. And actually, in a leaked call, a leaked video call that was obtained by More Perfect Union, Howard Schultz and other executives are seen giving instructions to local and regional managers for how they can more actively insert themselves into the ongoing organizing processes. They provide them with instructions for how they can increase anti-union pressure by giving them tactics such as isolating new workers, holding captive audience meetings, and subjecting workers to a barrage of emails, texts, and videos with, you know, full of anti-union rhetoric. So, you know, again, a big thing, a big common theme you see across all these different major companies that have tried to fight the unionization process, things like captive audience meetings are basically just a number one of the things that they do to beat down the workers and to dissuade them from joining the union. And on that call, Schultz also declares that, I pulled this out because it's a really weird quote, but he says, "It's an American right of workers not to unionize and to instead embrace the values and the culture of his or her company." I mean, like, yeah, it sure it is, but that's sort of the default setting, is that you don't unionize and you embrace the corporate culture. And so it's, you know, I guess it's a right of workers, but it's also kind of the opposite of what the actual right is, which is the right of workers to organize and to reject what the corporation is trying to put, the culture they're trying to put on them. You know, there's a lot of other things that he goes into and you know, pretty egregious ways that he tries to instruct these regional managers on how to disrupt the organizing process. But one thing that he did say that, again, is a pretty constant theme across all these different companies that are fighting unionization, is that he referred to his own employees, you know, the ones who are engaged in organizing, as some outside force that's trying desperately to disrupt our company. So, you know, we discussed this last month with Amazon, but they continue to refer to their own employees as if they are an outside force trying to come in, rather than their own employees trying to fight for better conditions and pay and all the things that they recognize within their own workplace. When really, you know, this is the company that's hiring outside consultants and bringing outside managers in to disrupt those, you know, those workplaces. So really, you know, who is the outside force there? And before we continue on this, I'm just going to take a quick break here to, you know, reintroduce the show. This is Labor Radio. So if you were just tuning in, you're listening to Labor Radio on KBOO. And it is listener supported KBOO Community Radio. And we'll get right back to our discussion about Starbucks disastrous anti-union campaign in a moment. But I just want to drop a quick reminder here to please donate to KBOO right now during our spring membership drive. Your contribution will be matched dollar for dollar up to $12,000, thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. So please help us reach our fundraising goal by donating today at kboo.fm/give. Or if you're using the KBOO mobile app, just click on the donate button. Thank you so much for supporting Community Powered Radio. And now back to our discussion of Starbucks. There's an even longer list here of the tactics that Starbucks has used to dissuade their workers from joining the union. You know, another one, which is pretty egregious, is that they have engaged in, you know, what is really illegal union busting tactics, which is firing pro-union workers for trying to organize their colleagues. Now, more than a dozen pro-union workers around the country have been fired or forced out of their jobs, each alleging that they were targeted for their workplace organizing efforts. And Starbucks has repeatedly denied allegations of union busting, and that those dismissals were retaliatory. However, the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board officials, recently determined that Starbucks had illegally fired seven of their employees who had been trying to organize a union in the Memphis location. And they are now being referred to as the Memphis Seven. And the NLRB has actually brought a lawsuit against Starbucks specifically to get those workers reinstated at their jobs. And, you know, on top of all this, at the beginning of this month, Schultz made a big deal out of announcing that the company would be raising its wages in all its stores, except at those stores which have already unionized or have scheduled union votes. And, you know, if you remember at the top of the show, we mentioned that there were over 60 stores that had already voted to unionize, and there were, you know, more than 250 that had union votes scheduled. So that is, you know, pretty selective, you know, that's targeted harassment, essentially, of these workers, that they would provide wage increases for everyone except for the ones who were working at those stores that already opted to join the union or were attempting to vote on it. Now, you know, a lot of labor experts were very quick to point out after this announcement was made that withholding raises from only unionized workers or workers in the process of unionizing is extremely illegal.
I think one thing to note there is just, I don't think it's actually about getting that policy through. It's about him saying it and then people hearing rumors of it, right?
Yep.
And so it's really the effect of that is completed once it leaves his mouth, more so than it is actually if it's followed through as like policy.
Absolutely, yeah. Much as all these other things are, it is an intimidation tactic of the highest order. You know, there's few things that would intimidate workers more out of joining a union than the threat of, you know, seeing a wage increase disappear from you, you know, or being, you know, targeted and fired or having your coworkers done. You know, those types of things are all pretty intense intimidation.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we've talked about it in so many of these other circumstances, but you know, I think as we, you know, we see the same sorts of things happening again and again, this is really not about the ability of, you know, whether it's Workers United, which is obviously like, you know, the kind of the parent union group of Starbucks and mm-hmm. what's going on now. But it's not really their ability to deal with these things. It's does the law kind of create an equal and fair ground for people to figure out, you know, what is the common good between both the corporation and the workers here. So, you know, we've hit on it a million times, but, you know, things like the PRO Act, things like we've been talking about for a long time, if we're really going to kind of maintain this wave, it's part of it's going to have to come from kind of the federal government and kind of laying down rules and regulations that make this just a more fair ground for people to kind of express their thoughts and opinions.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as you said, like, so many of these tactics, the anti-union tactics that Starbucks has deployed here would be completely made completely illegal under if the PRO Act were passed. You know, as they are now, some of them are against the NLRB, and you know, we'll discuss in a second how many violations the company has actually racked up. But you know, things like captive audience meetings and other intimidation tactics like that are not technically illegal. But if the PRO Act were to be passed, they would then be made illegal because it is really completely unfair for the company to compel workers into a meeting where they only get one side mm-hmm. of the issue and then are not allowed to discuss it with any of their coworkers. Now, you know, so as I just mentioned, in response to what Starbucks has done and all these ridiculous anti-union tactics that they rolled out, the NLRB has actually filed a major national lawsuit against Starbucks, charging the company with over 200 separate violations of federal labor laws laid out in the National Labor Relations Act. This lawsuit, which is one of the largest complaints that the NLRB has ever filed against the company, ever in history, was issued on May 4th after Starbucks failed to respond to a proposed settlement over the harassment and firing of several pro-union workers in Phoenix, Arizona. The NLRB argues that the company's actions constitute, quote, interfering with, restraining, and coercing employees in their exercise of the right to form a union. And you know, some of the 200 plus violations that they're being accused of, that are being listed in this suit, are that Starbucks illegally fired workers for engaging in organizing efforts, that they went around closing stores as retaliation for attempts to unionize. So if, you know, they caught wind that a store might have been in discussions to unionize, they would just go close that store until, you know, they could bring in new workers there. Surveilling, you know, pro-union workers in the Buffalo area. So the first area that the unionization effort bloomed, they immediately started surveilling a lot of those workers and you know, monitoring their conversations. They also were, you know, promising workers benefits if they opposed the union, which is against the NLRB or the NLRA. They also monitor employees' communications, you know, in stores all across the country where they are talking about unionization. They interrogated workers about the union and held them in those captive audience meetings. And, you know, they also selectively enforced work rules against only union supporters. So they have, you know, this handbook and some of the violations, you know, were only enforced against the folks who had come out in support of the union. So, you know, each of these violations were initially brought forward as complaints filed with the NLRB by the Starbucks Workers Union. And, you know, after investigating those, the NLRB officials found them all to be, you know, very credible. And so they went about bringing this case against against the company. And, you know, as part of the lawsuit, the NLRB has proposed specific remedies to the issue that they've highlighted, which most notably include compelling Howard Schultz, or, you know, in lieu of him, the executive vice president of operations in North America, to hold a company-wide meeting in order to explicitly inform employees about each of the labor rights that the company has violated. So each one of the 200 labor rights that the company has violated, they have to explain what those are and that the company, in fact, violated those workers' rights. And the other, one of the other things that the NLRB would like to have Starbucks do in response to this is that the Starbucks should have to provide the union with equal time to address employees if they are convened for captive audience meetings. So essentially, you know, the workers are forced into meetings in their workplace in which they are being bombarded with anti-union rhetoric. Now, what the NLRB is saying is that if they're going to have to go into those meetings, they should also get to hear, have equal time be provided to the union to explain why they should join the union as opposed to just the anti-union rhetoric. Seems fairly reasonable to me, to be honest. You know, although this lawsuit against Starbucks is reasonably being called massive and unprecedented, you know, the way that I see it, it could also very accurately be described as, you know, quote, the federal government simply enforcing existing labor laws. Like, the fact that it feels so unprecedented is actually because this is something that none of us, most of us, have never seen within our lifetimes. You know, we've never seen the government actually go after labor law violators this explicitly, even though there have been egregious, you know, violations of labor laws within our lifetime. So, you know, it is unprecedented and it is massive, but it's also just the government doing its basic job. Now, you know, for, you know, kind of a shocking turn of events here, there actually is a group of Starbucks investors who are imploring the company to stop, to put a halt to their union busting activities. And these investors have implored Schultz to consider abandoning his long-standing distaste for unions by telling him that it's actually the norm in many places for companies to have positive working relationships with their union, which is something that we've discussed in the show a lot, actually, that, you know, as opposed to these companies constantly trying to fight any upcropping in the union and then having unstable workforces and varying, you know, supplies of personnel, if they were to in fact embrace the union, they could more easily control how many workers they have and you know, basically the basic pay across the board in a way without upsetting the, you know, without having leading to more and more uprisings and having to spend more and more money on these fights down the road in the years future.
Yeah, and you know, we've talked about it. I mean, obviously sports is such a different scenario than what we're dealing with here, but we've talked about it on this show from a sports perspective in that most unions are willing to kind of, as a trading chip, like bargain the newer folks, right? And kind of skew a lot of the earnings more towards tenured people, right? So, you know, in the case of like an NBA, for example, you know, the people coming into the NBA have a lot less rights and kind of control of their salary than later people who have more rights and kind of more benefits. Right. So, you know, we've seen this across the board, and I think the NBA, as for example, uses it to great effect. And, you know, there is some sort of kind of coexisting that can go on if people embrace each other as opposed to kind of just full force trying to destroy it from the outset.
Yeah, it just becomes a less tumultuous situation for both sides. And it, you know, it makes it so that workers are actually, you know, instead of embracing the corporate culture, workers are actually feeling valued in their workplace and feeling heard and feeling empowered. And they are then working towards a common goal with the corporation in a way that is much more harmonious than what is currently employed by, you know, having at-will employment and workers being upset in their workplaces, not having any way of airing those grievances. So, I mean, it's just, it's the obvious thing that companies should do, but it's just the mindset of all these corporations that they need to just squash the union because they can't even have that in there, even if they don't even recognize why it is that they're doing that. That's just the knee-jerk reaction that corporations employ. Now, we're, of course, you know, as we always are, we're running out of time, But there's just a funny anecdote that I want to throw out there before we sign off, which is that just this past week, organizers with the Starbucks Workers United Union, as well as folks from the Amazon Labor Union and other labor movement representatives, were invited to a roundtable meeting at the White House with Vice President Harris and Labor Secretary Marty Walsh. And during that meeting, President Biden actually made an impromptu appearance and thanks in order to thank the worker organizers for their leadership in organizing unions. And following that meeting, Starbucks actually released a statement claiming that they were, quote, deeply concerned that the Workers United was invited to the meeting while no Starbucks officials were invited to that meeting. And I just think that that's such a delicious piece of irony right there, that they didn't even recognize the ridiculousness of that statement, considering that they have been holding captive audience meetings with their workers in which they are not inviting any representatives of the union into those meetings, and they are compelling their workers to go into them. So, you know, just a little bit of taste of their own medicine right there. And yeah, so we will have to leave it there. And we will keep, you know, this story is going to keep developing, so we'll keep an eye on it. But thank you so much for tuning into Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
Have a great night.
What do we mean when we talk about personality? What is your personality? It is the way you get along with other people around you and with your changing environment.
This is Bill McKibben coming at you on KBOO, Portland, Oregon.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad.